Welcome to Accounting High.
You've done something, sounds very achievable for anybody looking to go into accounting that may not have thought it was sexy in the first place. You've turned this into a very profitable career. You seem very comfortable. You're not overworked. You saw what the alternative was at Deloitte and at Cohen, and you've done it by positioning yourself in the market as an expert. You afford yourself the ability to have patience and confidence. Are you a very patient person in general?
I would say I'm overall patient. If you think about the business aspect, I'm patient about if I get 10 clients and one accepts it and nine deny me, I'm confident and patient and keep going with the flow, with the process.
May I have your attention, please?
From cloud accountant CUA back to desktop accounting advisory and tech apps adopt, went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same. Raleigh is the spot where I edutain, like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast. Next one we drop, cause you know it don't stop, it's 24-7 on the Accounting High Live. TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk. Cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop. Then we lean back and nod because the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
OKR. Introducing the star of our show.
Scotty and Bilal.
We're going to have a problem here.
Oh, what's up, homie? Class is in session. Thanks for joining me. I've got Bilal Mihana on here. I met Bilal recently, a couple weeks ago, in person. I have recognized him from his previews, the show that he's got with Kelly Roars. You can check that out, From Zero to Millions. And I recognized them at Western CPE's New Money Summit. We chatted. We had a pretty good time there. It was a dope conference. Lots of fun. We talked rap. We talked all kinds of things. But today, we're going to talk about positioning your firm. We're going to talk about what Bilal has done with his firm, what the future holds. We're going to talk about opportunities for you as an accountant, new potential income streams for you. But let's first just talk about you, Bilal. What brought you into accounting? How did you get into this mess? You're living, where are you?
Michigan, Detroit area, Detroit.
Your accent doesn't sound like you're from Michigan. This is not a Detroit accent here. You don't sound like Eminem.
Close enough. I was born in Beirut, Lebanon.
Okay.
So I came to the States when I was 10 years old. I lived all my life. I came here in the Detroit area, mainly in Dearborn. And now I live in Livonia, which is about 15 minutes from Detroit.
So you're in the Motor City. You're growing up. And what did you want to be when you were growing up? What was your aspirations?
I always liked business. That was my kind of business was, I never thought about accounting as a profession, but I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always did side hustles and sold stuff and bought stuff. And that was my high school days through college. And in college, it took me a minute to figure out what I want because I wanted to do what the parents want, you know, become a doctor or a lawyer or engineer. Those are three things. But I never liked any of those. So I liked business. I was like, oh, well, what's the business degree that I can, you know, graduate from and be able to do something with it? And accounting was the only one that I thought, okay, I can begin accounting and have my own firm. That was like the only business degree that I can use it for a license, basically. I never thought about the financial planning aspect of it at that time. I never knew about it as much as a CPA. But I was like, let me go into accounting. And accounting wasn't my, so when I graduated accounting, it wasn't my plan A to be an accountant. I had my own business at that time. And plan B was, okay, if my business fail, I'll go into accounting, become an accountant. And so I had I started my business my last year in college in 2011, a vape business. So e-cigarettes, e-liquids at that time. at that time wasn't mainstream, and my goal was to make it, you know, 7-8 figure business and sell it and make a lot of money.
Were you manufacturing these products or?
Yeah, so we were manufacturing the e-liquid side, and then we were getting the devices from China. At that time, you would sell the liquid on the side and the device separately, so sold separately. But e-liquid at that time, most were made in China. So rarely were made in the US. We made them here and we were selling them. We did well. We almost hit 7 figures the first year. And then things changed second year because that at that time, the industry was very volatile, changing constantly.
Regulations too, I'm sure.
No, I was a lot of rumors on regulations until now. But at that time, there was no regulations at all. It was free, you know, wild, wild west. But the market was deciding what they want. And every 6 months, they want something else, like completely different line. So if you invested in X, then 6 months from now, you becomes obsolete and you want something, buy a new, different product line. So by third year, my product were obsolete. None of the devices I invested in R&D in China to bring them here. And the liquid that I invested in became just a commodity at that time. And people went products, different things, everything, premium. And so the third year into the business, I gave it up. I gave it to my brother and started working at a company called Cohen & Company.
What was it called?
Cohen & Company.
Okay.
It was an original firm. They had multi-states. I think it was Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, I think, at that time. So I was there for a year. I was like, let me go in, learn the business, and 3 years from now, I go on my own. That was the plan.
And Cohen & Company was, were they an accounting firm?
Yeah, CPA firm.
Okay. CPA firm.
So I was like, yeah, I'll do three years, learn, you know, all the basic stuff, tax and accounting, all those different things. I did the tax mainly on the tax side. It was a firm that had obviously audit and tax department, so I chose tax. So I did that for a year and a half at Cohen. I went to another firm called CNM, Clay McCurvy. They got bought out recently by a bigger firm. I was there for like 7 months, and then I went to Deloitte. After that, I was like, I'm going to be in Deloitte for a minute. I like, you know, that was my go-to company. I want to see how that works and how they do things on a big scale. But I went there. I saw everybody working their butt off, 20-year-olds working 80 hours a day, partners working 90 hours a week.
It's impossible to work 80 hours a day, but yeah, 80 hours a week. That's
they were working a lot. I mean, when I came in, my wife was pregnant with my second kid. We had a daughter and she was pregnant with my son. And first week, man, my team I was on, this 22-year-old was, that team I was on, not the whole team, was working on a client that he wanted everything by the 15th of March filed. He had about 40 entities. And they were working, like he came at 6 in the morning, or 6, 7 in the morning, and worked till like 3 in the morning straight. And I saw that, I was like, man, I have to compete with this guy, these guys to make it. So from then, and then first few months at Deloitte, I was like literally planning my, like planning, I want to talk to the partners, talk to the managers, talk to everybody at the, within in the department. And I was trying to fill out the whole department. I was like, can I stay here more than 1 year? And I realized that most of them are not happy and most of them work a lot. And you don't make a lot of money. It's not like you make a ton of money. So I planned my exit in a way. So I started doing some side hustles, getting some clients on the side, practicing the flow.
So you started, you had that entrepreneurial bug again. I mean, you started this business, you left it to your brother. Cohen didn't work out. And at Deloitte, you're already like, okay, I'm going to start back out on my own.
Yeah. Then, yeah, because by then.
Was this 3 years? Was it 3 years yet or?
It was 2.5 years. And when I went to Deloitte, I wanted to stay there for longer. Okay. But when I went to Deloitte, I was like, okay.
Paying you pretty good. How much were you getting paid there at Deloitte?
At that time, it was about 60,000.
Okay.
Wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot.
It's not that good.
No. I mean, that was back in 18. Now senior accountant gets paid way more than that. But it wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't the money that made change my mind. It was about, I went there and it's the same thing as any other company. Yeah. The branding is nice. The whole prestige is nice. The whole onboarding is nice and the training is good. But everything else tastes the same, right? Same menu.
A better bottle, a different, not the same wine, right?
Exactly.
So drinking the same wine.
But one thing stuck out. I was like, if I want to make partner, half the partners were divorced. And we're working, still working a lot of hours. So if I want to be that person, okay, well, what's the incentive? I'm making a lot of money, but still my life is miserable. But so I decided right away, okay, I wanted to exit. So I planned my exit. So I want to focus on something. I interviewed a lot of accountants at that time that had their own CPA firm. I just went to research mode and finally opened my firm. Focused on e-commerce at that time and dental, mainly because e-commerce
was... You started your firm out knowing you had a niche and had a focus. Were you strict about which clients you took on?
Yeah, I wanted from the beginning, I wanted something that is virtual. That was my whole goal. Like, I wanted to build a virtual firm because I wanted to travel and all these different things. I had these ideas in my head. Obviously, when you start having kids and wife and all these different things, it's changes things around. But still, I have the option. So I wanted to be virtual because everything, well, a lot of people I talked to at that time, CPAs, were local. I asked them about the pricing, how many hours they work, how many employees they have, blah, blah, blah. So I did my calculation based on their pricing. I was like, I have to work a lot of hours. What's the point? But being online initially, because I wanted to go back. So I went on Facebook. Initially, before I wanted to decide to start my own firm, I was like, let me do some side hustling and do e-commerce again. So that was the initial start point. So I went on Facebook to find groups that e-commerce, because I haven't been doing e-commerce at that time for like a few years. So I forgot about the whole thing, how it works. So when I started joining those groups, it clicked to me. It's like, huh, I can just service these guys that don't know much about accounting and tax. So that's when I was like, okay, boom. I know what I want. I want this.
You know e-commerce and you know accounting and tax. There's your product market.
Exactly. Fit. Exactly. And I can relate. I can relate a lot to those guys. With the start point. Because I did, throughout my high school until college, I did drop shipping, private label, eBay, Amazon. So I did all those things.
You can speak their language and the language of business.
Exactly. So that was like the thing that really kind of gave me this insight. Okay, I want to do this. And the pricing was a lot better for e-commerce than for just a local guy next door that wanted some bookkeeping and tax. The guy next door, it was just different feel. Like if I told the guy in e-commerce, hey, I'm going to charge you at that time, I was like, oh, my pricing was like $500 a month for everything, accounting and tax, all the stuff. But local guy was about $200, $150 a month for everything. The calculation in my head is like, if I can get to 10 clients, 20 clients, blah, 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 and I can make more money. So then I always knew this. So I did e-commerce. I got into it. I got a few clients. And then my wife is a dentist. So she was graduating dental school at that time. I think she graduated dental school in 14. And so I wanted to open her practice. So I started learning about the dental side of the business. Not become a dental CPA specifically. I wanted to open a practice for her. So I wanted to learn the business because she don't like business stuff. So I was like, okay, let me learn about the business, sure. Dental side. So I read the books, podcasts, blah, blah, blah. And then I just naturally said, okay, well, I realized a lot of dentists need help specifically on tax and accounting side. Education on the business, how to sell, how to buy, how to get patients, how to sell patients, how to increase profits, how to decrease overhead, all the nuances that technically accountant doesn't really help. Unless they specify like the niche.
Not if the accountant's just doing compliance. If the accountant's just handling compliance, they're not strategically looking at anything.
Yeah, so no advisory type services. So it just fit. It kind of fit. You know, I'm not lucky, but it just happened naturally into my, you know, my what I'm trying to do with the e-commerce and dental, is realize that. So. But mainly my price point was like, I want to not work a lot. Like, I don't work 80 hours to make 100 grand a year. That wasn't my, like, I was like, I want to price point where I can work 40 hours and still make 100 grand, or 40 hours, still make 200, 300 and go up and as I build my firm. And I always had the vision. Okay. I want it where I can just set up a system where I can just plug and play everything else, the compliance side and the accounting side to be scaled. And the advisory side is based on my expertise.
Mm-hmm. Which doesn't really scale, but you really got the pricing right from the beginning, or at least comparatively speaking, compared to what else you were looking at in the market, your pricing was double or
yes, you know, even more than double. Because at that time, I was telling my colleagues that as I want to do this much a month, I was like, oh, this is crazy. You can't charge that much a month. That's too much. But yeah,
unless you're really adding value and you're presenting that value by speaking their language. So tell me at least, how did you market and how did you find your first few clients?
All Facebook groups.
Aha, so, watering holes.
Yeah, so so when I realized initially when I wanted to become, go into e-commerce to do a side business, I found there's all these groups in e-commerce. And then from there, I was like, oh, is there a dental groups out there? Let me search, boom, boom, boom. Oh, yeah, there's dental groups. Okay, let me join them. So I started posting stuff. While I was working at Deloitte, I'll post stuff about tax and accounting. You know, just post things and comment things and reply. So I'm not looking for business. I'm just looking for just added value, getting some points from the people and stuff like that. And that's the thing about starting a firm, like starting before starting. Because when you start a firm with zero, like now you're desperate and just... But when you're not desperate, you're getting paid for everything you want.
You come from a position of power in that stance. You can dictate the terms.
But you're more patient, right? So I was posting things and I was like, okay, you know, building content basically. I was the content building in a way with the posting and the commenting on post, just building content. And a lot of people at that time, there was not a lot of CPAs on Facebook. Right now, there's a lot of CPAs on Facebook, a lot of accountants. But that time I started in 18-19, there wasn't a lot of accountants on the dental groups or on the e-commerce groups. So that was in a group of like 10, 20,000, you'd find probably another accountant, one accountant. So that was the other person, right? Right now, there's a lot more accountants on those groups. But then, so slowly, I would post stuff.
You were the rock star.
And yeah, and some groups, I was like the go-to. There's a group called Trends. It closed down recently. It started in 19, and that was a very good group. I liked that group a lot. I got a lot of clients from the group. I mean, that group made me about, until now, probably about 400 grand in revenue, 300-400 grand in revenue a year.
Wow.
Just by getting clients and charging them.
Well, you position yourself in the right spot to the right people with what was your right price, too. When you were ready, when a client was ready to sign on with you. Now, have your prices increased since then? Because five seems pretty low.
Okay. Three times.
Dope. All right.
So my average now is about 18,000 a year, average client.
Okay.
So
1,500 a month, yeah.
Yeah, $1,500 a month. So my base was already higher at that time, but I kept as like, it's not enough. Because if I wanted to bring good talent, I might do all the work and split the profit.
So for our students, if you do focus on a niche and an industry, you could command double what a generalist does. Because I'm kind of a generalist at my firm, and our average is about 8-something per client, 800-something a month. I'm just like throwing out averages, and you're averaging 1,500 a month, give or take. That's because you have a focus, and you're marketing to the right people, and you started out the right way too. And it's probably not that difficult for you to raise your prices either, because where else are they going to go at this point? They now know you're the expert. So you're in command, full command of your prices. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just...
No, 100%. And it makes it a lot easier because it's all about confidence. And it's a lot harder to go into a construction company and say, hey, I can charge $1,500 a month. And I can do what? right? I don't know the pain points.
You're
I
can file my taxes point. Better than the next guy.
Yeah, like, I can come up with some tax strategies, but beyond that, if you call me on a Tuesday, hey, Bilal, I need some help. You know, my company's not doing well. What should I do? I don't know much about the construction industry to help you, right? So, but with dental e-commerce, I can help. I can provide a lot extra value that the client is looking for. I can teach my staff to do the same thing. I can now scale that advisory type services because I can say, hey, read those books. Listen to those podcasts, follow my lead, come to my calls with the client, just listen to what I'm trying to say, how I help them. I'll do some Loom videos and say, here's what I'm looking at, the financials. That's what I look at and say, point out to the client what is, you know, we need to change or adjust or all these different things. So it's easy to teach when you just focus on one niche or two niche, right? And something that you've already been doing for a long time. But it becomes easier to scale because I can just, now, any system you build can be scalable if you know what you're trying to sell. If you want to be a general dental accountant, it's fine. You can do that, but it's hard to add advisory to it. So you have to be bookkeeping and accounting and tax. right? And you can scale that, you know, with systems in place. I would say if you want to add the advisory side, which is, gives you a higher average per client, now it has to be a understanding the industry really well, understand the pain points of the client, understand what they're looking for and where they're going, right? Those things will take time to understand the industry, with understanding the industry and understanding the financials and all those different things. But I would say, yeah, don't be scared of increasing prices, especially now. We're in a shortage. So increasing pricing is not, should not be. Now, you want to increase it based on added value or added services. I mean, right now, since COVID, how many things have been added on our plate to do compliance side? Right now, we talked about the BOI as another compliance aspect. So a lot of added services we have to do, QBI calculation and bonus depreciation, all different stuff that we have to add.
What you're talking about now is a lot of compliance additions too. And adding compliance additions is, in a way, it's adding value, but the customer maybe doesn't value it. They know it has to get done. So if you're a firm, and let's go back to the generalist firm that's going to jump to a construction guy and say, I can do your taxes. Well, you're doing something that they have to get done.
Yep.
You may not be doing it. They're perceived. You're not going to look any better than the next guy that's doing that same thing because it has to get done. You're not adding any extra value on top of that. You do have to charge the right prices for these, for all the compliance services, but there's a ceiling on what you can charge for compliance. I don't think there's, I mean, the ceiling is a lot higher when you're adding the value of advisory and you're advising them on their business and strategically helping them with their business. You're able to command those higher prices. So adding more compliance services, again, still keeps you a generalist, and your margins can only be so high if you're not adding that extra value on top of it.
I agree. And adding, well, like the addition has come in with the compliance side. Like if you don't raise your prices on the compliance side, now you're doing more work.
You have to raise your prices.
Yeah. Now the extra money and to charge the client in advisory services comes from knowing the niche really, really well. But anybody can pick a niche. And you can be a general accountant and pick your own niche. You say, I'll take all our clients on, but if I want to do advisory, I want to only do it in specific, let's say, dental or construction. But I would advise if they want to pick a niche, learn everything about the industry. So when you come in, you're actually doing it from a confident perspective. You can actually provide that value and learn the pain points, what they're looking for mainly. Well, why do you want me to do some advisory service with you? Every business needs some help. And we can look at the financials and see the mainly the cash flow issues and overhead issues. But I mean, I had a client recently that came in. He was doing about $1.2 million a year in dental. Usually, typically, a dental practice takes home about 40%. This guy was losing money. So in essence, I was like, okay, right away, I figure out, okay, well, this boom, boom, boom. Here, like, you're overpaying on this, you're overpaying on that. Cut this, cut that. Now we can go to 30%, which is good enough. Before, you were taking home 5%. Like, well, what is this? So right away, I found out.
So you started by cutting costs.
Right away, because I was like, okay, a $1.2 million practice should take home 40%, okay? If taking home 5%, there's a 35% buffer. What's the issues here? Okay, you're overhiring. You don't need that many staff to run that practice. If you're like doing $3 million, I was like, okay, you need that. You're paying here. Got this, got that. Now we added, okay, we can add another 20, 30 grand a month in cost, cutting. Now that money goes to you. So now we figure out, why do you need those staff? Why in this case of this? Well, how many patients do you see a day? How many patients does that hygienist? So now you can go into it in depth into how many patients you see a day, what's your average per patient, what's your average cost acquisition, so we can go into depth, and then the doctor looks at you, man, this guy knows his
and
I can listen to
you're
him.
Worth. You're worth an extra 35% now because you're getting him, you're helping him approach that 40% that he should be at in the first place.
100%. So it comes down into like slowly building that brand.
Well,
building
40%,
that.
Not 100%. Let's get him to 40%. You're never going to be at 100%. That's amazing though. So what you're doing is you're now the rock star. You're making accounting sexy. Too. Like in the beginning, when your parents said you should be the doctor, the lawyer, the engineer, and you saw accounting, now that accounting profession doesn't seem as boring, at least to you. Like you're now the hero for a lot of your clients.
But to be honest with you, think about it. My wife is a dentist, right? She can't travel and work.
No. Yeah.
That's an extra benefit. I think a lot of accountants right now have that. It's, I think, you know, we can work from home. We can work from anywhere. It's becoming an acceptable mainstream type of job. And I think it's a really good benefit to have. If I want to go travel to Mexico for a month, I can do that. I can be on the beach for, 4 hours a day and work in 8 hours anytime I want. I can work 4 hours in the morning and 4 hours at night. So I can be very, very flexible. And that's a huge, huge benefit that most accountants, I think, don't take advantage of. I mean, Kelly, she works, you know, in the morning and she works at night. She
and
makes
you're referring
her schedule.
To your co-host, Kelly Rose, right?
Yes, Kelly yeah. Rose, yeah. She makes her schedule from, like, you can't do that. Most professionals, you can't do that. You can't mix your schedule, put early morning and late night and mix your hours. And I think that's a huge benefit for a lot of people that want to travel or want to spend different time zones and different places. And it's very flexible, very, very yeah. flexible.
Well, and you have to create the ability to do that, because there are some accountants that are still tied to their office because they're seeing clients in person. And
yes.
they have office hours where their office is open to a certain time, and it's a disruption if they were to close the office. So you have to create that by design. Initially, you started out saying, I want to be virtual because I want to be able to travel. And so you designed your firm from the ground up to give you that ability and to give you that freedom. And then you were seeking the financial freedom too. And you're on your way there. It sounds like you're building. So tell me about the makeup of your practice now and how long, so how many years you've been in practice by yourself and the makeup of it.
So I started in 19, February 1st, 2019. So that'll be going on
about almost 5 years.
5 years now. So yeah, we have about 10 employees. There's four in the US, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the rest overseas.
Oh, dope. Sounds like mine.
Yeah.
What's your top line?
We passed, so we were 1.1.
Okay.
1 million.
All right.
So
yeah.
Last year I think last year was the first year, 2023 was above 1 million, and 2024 we should be doing 1.4.
That's amazing. That's dope.
Yeah.
Congrats there.
Yeah.
Are you at 40% margins?
More.
More?
Yeah, 45.
Woo!
Yeah.
This
I should
the model.
Be at 50. Should be a 50 more. 50%.
You're the model.
No, so I would say I'm lying, because I saw a post by Brandon Hall. So before, so the way I would do my P&L, everything owner expense I put at the bottom, okay,
sure.
And then wages would be at the bottom. So I would see my operating income is at 45%. Everything else, like pay the staff, everything else, and then what's left over before paying myself is 45%.
Okay. That's okay. Fair.
But then I moved my wages up to see, okay, what's my, if I want to replace myself and be somebody and not work at all, what's my true margins? It's 35%.
Okay.
So it's a true
and I
margins.
I can tell you from my experience that that's about accurate, because I have already replaced myself. I was about your size when I started that, and my margins are about that, like 35%, 38 or something like that. And I don't even take salary at my firm anymore. I'm just a advisor to the firm, really. I'm kind of like on the board. So
like Jeff Bezos.
It's possible. I don't know about that. I'm definitely not that scale. But yeah, it's certainly possible. That was my goal I kind of set out to that, and then I would see what would happen on the other end of it. But, you know, I did it with a generalist firm too. You've got a firm that in some ways you're still going to be tied to until you find somebody that's also the expert. Because we don't really do too much strategic. That's why our clients are much below, like half of your average.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So we have more clients that we're serving, but strategically, our team is good with the tax and they can do the tax planning and they could help the client in that way and build that relationship. But we have a lot of industries that we work with. So it's mm-hmm. just like you said, we got construction one day and then we've got psychiatrists another day, you know, so they're working on a lot of
yes.
different types of clients. And it's hard for me now that I've been so far removed I get frustrated too, because I would love to go back and verticalize my firm and be more strategic in that sense of industry vertical. So I love the way that you started. The warning sign for you is now you know that in order to replace yourself, you're going to have to find somebody that can strategically speak to the clients like you can. And maybe that's somebody that you already have on your team. And maybe your team is learning that because they are continually working with the same clients. And if you've got four in the US, five in the US, you know, they're the client facing, they're the front facing people that are going to be dealing with the clients too. So
yeah. And they fit. That. So this year will be my first. So before this year, we have a team. So we have a tax manager, two seniors and staff, and me on top. So we're handling. So we have one team with accountants that handles the e-commerce side. We have one team of accountants that handles the dental side. And then the same people that will do the tax will for all of our whole clients. So the accountants on the dental side, they are in US base that do the bookkeeping and tax. So we had the team for everybody, basically. On the tax side, we had for everybody, the same people that were doing the accounting and tax, and they were doing the accounting and tax for all our clients. Oh, that makes sense. So this year, we're going to split the teams. We have a tax team and accounting team. So the accountants will do all the accounts for all the clients, and the tax will do the tax for all the clients. Because before, I was trying to build a team where I have a tax manager, senior, two staff that will handle like 40, 50 clients. A tax manager, senior, two staff will handle another 40, 50 clients. But then I realized it's better to separate the services completely. So the tax people are not doing any bookkeeping, accounting, and accounting people are not doing any tax work.
Where does that leave the advisor, the one that interfaces with the client?
Currently with the tax people.
Okay.
Because I would say mainly beside my strategic, my expertise on a specific niche with the dental e-commerce, clients mainly want the tax planner. We haven't gotten deeper into the accounting advisory services. We do tax planning services. I come in with my expertise because I know the niche so well. I can go in and advise the client one or twice a year on what they need to do. Now, if their client is struggling, I can go and do more services. That'd be a separate engagement.
You're like only 5% in margins.
Yeah, but I would say if with this setup right now we have, I can scale the company and focus on dental, for example. And now I can teach my tax manager, provide some advisory services beyond the tax planning. And everything else would be a systemized way we can bring in the client, provide some upfront services with accounting, would be streamlined with all the accounting manager in charge will streamline all the accounting processes. The tax manager in charge will streamline all the tax processes. I can see it right now with this year be more flowing better with the separate teams in place. And that's, I think, long term can be scalable.
Well, what you're doing is creating cleaner separation of duties and also repetition for the tax preparers. They don't have to deal with all of that extra accounting work during tax season because that's an extra burden. And what it does is create too many constraints when you have one person doing both when they're trying to keep up with the accounting and then also do the taxes. So now you've made it a lot more, you're probably increasing your capacity by doing this too in some ways.
100%. And another thing also with accounting, you can find a lot of good talent in accounting outside the US. It's hard to find good tax talent outside the US.
Where's your outsource team located?
So we have two in the Philippines, one in Canada, and soon we'll have two in Lebanon.
Canada?
Yeah. Well, the Canadian one, she used to live in the Philippines, and she moved to Canada.
All right. Because so, I was just talking about this. I got one guy in the Philippines that's looking to move to Australia. And then my operations or one of my team was like, yeah, and we're going to have to pay him more if he moves to Australia. Because cost of living. So yes. I was like, well, maybe we'll replace him with somebody in the Philippines. I didn't think I was willing
to do that. But that lady, her name is Ellie, she's an asset. She's great.
Now, did you pay her more when she moved from the Philippines to Canada?
Yeah, okay. Oh yeah, a lot more. Yeah.
What was the increase? Or what was the, like, give me an average or whatever.
I mean, it went from what, $1,000 a month to like $4,000 a month? Yeah.
That's how much... That definitely sounds right for US, because I usually tell people it's about a fourth or fifth of what I would pay somebody equivalent in the US. And I'm getting better work done in the Philippines. Like from the employees there, they're doing better overall.
Yeah. And the thing is with her, she can manage staff and talk to clients.
Ooh, okay. That's important.
You know what I'm saying? And that's like...
If she's client facing, that's valuable.
Yeah, so that's like, okay, if I can replace her, I'm paying double. I'm paying $8,000 a month probably. She knows all systems. She knows e-commerce really well. She knows the accounting really well. She talks to clients. Clients like her. And that was like mainly
so here's a question. What if she moved back to the Philippines?
I'll probably keep it.
Okay.
Yeah, fair. Keep it.
Fair. Because then she would be royalty over there. She would, yeah. She would be doing great.
Yeah, I'll probably like it's hard to find. I mean, like, listen, this year, like last year, I tried to hire two managers, and I was paying them, you know, six figures.
Accountants don't really want to manage people. I can tell you that they want to manage the books and.
It's hard to find good talent that are trying to, like, you know, yeah, I pay them a lot of money and they can't even manage staff or clients are really good. So that was like, okay, I mean, at some point, I was like, if I'm having a hard time finding good talent in the US, why not outsource it and see what happens? And at least if I lose money overseas, it's, you know, I'm losing $1,000 a month. Here, I'm losing $10,000 a month. Big difference.
Absolutely. I love that strategy. Your team in the US, are they in Michigan, Detroit, or are they spread out?
No, they're Michigan, but they're not in the office. They're remote. So my office is like literally 2 minutes from my house. And for me as a person, I have to move around. I can't be in one place. So I switch, I just come to the house, I drive to the office, I get away from my kids, I go to my, I'm moving around throughout the whole day. Having a separate office helps me a lot just to break it out and change their moods around. But all my staff that live in Michigan are remote. I have one that stays with the office here. He lives like a few blocks from the office. But everybody else is remote.
Do you ever have any clients at the office?
Probably one. One comes in, literally one.
Your clients are spread everywhere, right? Like,
yes.
You're finding them through Facebook, so there's no geographic footprint.
Well, my clients are in 25 states and about 3-4 countries, I think, outside the US that are e-commerce because they do business in the US. But yeah, I have one guy that was a friend, like family friend, we know from a long time ago. And he's a construction business. He's a developer. He came to me as a, you know, family and friend, wanted to do his accounting and advisory and stuff like that. He's the only one that comes to the office. I can't fire him.
Oh, he's a family or friend. Yeah, you can't do it. You can't. Okay.
Like,
so, No. That's so you've done something. Sounds very achievable for anybody looking to go into accounting that may not have thought it was sexy in the first place. You've turned this into a very profitable career. You seem very comfortable. You're not overworked. You saw what the alternative was at Deloitte and at Cohen, and you've done it by positioning yourself in the market as an expert too. You've got confidence and patience. And I think those are the two things that keep coming up in this conversation. By positioning yourself the right way in the market, you afford yourself the ability to have patience and confidence, but it takes time. So for somebody that is impatient, like myself, initially, do you have any tips or any advice for anybody that is very impatient? Are you a very patient person in general? Seem to be, but I can't.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, everyone has their blow ups and stuff like that, but I'm patient in general. Overall, I think more, and I think that gives you more patience. And it depends on what you're patient on. Like, I mean, it's what kind of what perspective when you say impatient. I play sports. We play basketball. Sometimes we get into, you know, push and shove and all the stuff and things. But overall, I would say I'm more patient than my little brother. He's not my little brother. He's bigger than me.
Well, you can be competitive and still be patient.
Yeah, I would say I'm overall patient. If you think about the business aspect, I would say I'm not satisfied. That I always improving on the business.
Yeah, you're not too complacent.
No, that's one thing that I don't like to be. I'm patient about if I get 10 clients and one accepts it and 9 deny me, I'm patient with like, okay, I can keep, I'm confident and patient and keep going with the flow, with the process.
Do you deny people sometimes too? You said if you get 10 and one denies you, that's patience. But what about?
No. If I get 10 clients and one accepts me and 9 deny me,
oh, sure.
Yeah, I will always be more patient based on, you know, most of the time, if not all the time, I get denied based on pricing. It's too expensive.
That's okay. And you've created that. But do you ever deny somebody to say they're not a good fit?
Yes. I've been learning that for the past few years. I see red flags when I see prospects ask for certain things right off the bat. Right away, I was like last had a client, a prospect emailed me, he wanted to meet with me and blah, blah, blah. We met. So as a discovery session, right? And in the discovery session, all he's asking about tax planning strategies. good to know each other first. You know, I can't give you ideas and strategies.
Discovery session. Yeah.
Try what you want and what I want, and can we agree on those parameters? But then when we hang up, I emailed, I was like, you know, it's not a good fit. Because I see like those people that ask right away, hey, I want, give me this or give me that. And then they ask how much you charge, what's your pricing look like. And then they want to know all the different strategies. I was like, I don't know much about your business. I can't provide that strategy to you unless I know more things about your business. But they don't ask you questions on what you're trying to solve. They want you to answer their questions on the things that will benefit them. But at the same time, we can't answer those questions because you don't know what advice, you don't have the whole picture. So those are the ones that right away you learn to ask questions on, okay, how many accounts have you seen so far?
Ooh, you know, that's a good question.
Like, why are you looking for domain account? Like that guy that came recently, he came through a referral, right? And for my client. So I just learned the process of asking the right questions and trying to learn the process of figure out the pain points in the prospect. What they're looking for. And usually, typically, when the client or the prospect asks you for pricing right away without knowing the whole picture, usually those guys are price shopping. So they don't stay around.
We're going to have one little bonus segment of our conversation. I didn't think we could end this without talking about BOI. I know you mentioned it, BOI mm-hmm. reporting. It's a big thing now. I keep seeing memes and everybody talk about BOI, and I honestly hadn't even heard about it because I'm so far removed. I hadn't even heard about it until before Western CPE, and then that's the uproar, and everybody's talking about it on social media. And 3 days ago, 4 days ago was the first day of BOI reporting. Yeah. Well, when I think BOI, I think of Big Boy from Outkast. So yeah. Please enlighten me. What is same spelling. What does BOI stand for?
Let me look at it. BOI, what it stands for, be honest with you, I don't know. It stands for Beneficiary Ownership Information Reporting.
Beneficiary Ownership Information.
Information, yeah. BOI. And technically, what they're saying is that that's to fight crime. They want to fight with that.
Of course, terrorism.
Terrorism and money laundering and all this good stuff. But it's an added compliance report, like the FBAR, but this is more for everybody that in the U.S. or outside the U.S.
Right. So FBAR was really for anti-terrorism. It was supposed to be. That was
It's for foreigners also, people that own
and that
assets.
Gets filed
the
with the tax return, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Is this beneficiary ownership?
This one is a separate reporting. It's separate.
Yeah. Well, FBAR is separate too, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, you're right.
FBAR, I'm not sure if the FBAR is with FinCEN. I think FBAR is with the IRS, but this is FinCEN separately. So this is a different department under the Department of Treasury that you have to file with. And this is more about more nuances, who owns the company, who runs the company, who you are, maybe your driver license, your passport, your phone number, address. So this is more nuanced. With the FBAR, if you do less than 10 grand, I probably don't have to report. But with this one, if you own a company, you have to report any type of company. So
for our students, it's a money-making opportunity. It should be seen that way, right?
100%.
All your clients are going to have are all your clients going to have to do this?
Everybody that owns an LLC, S Corp, C Corp, LLC, I think the rule is under 5 million, 20 full-time employees, 5 million revenue. Under that, you have to do it. Over that, you're exempt.
If you have over 20 employees or over 5 million in revenue?
Yeah, over 5 million in revenue and over 20 employees.
You're exempt?
You're exempt.
Oh, wow.
So under, you're not exempt.
So if you have clients that are under 5 million and under 20 employees, they have to file this in 2024?
If they open a new company in 24.
Ah, if the company is already
existing, then it's 25.
25 employees?
No, so you're 25.
Oh, they won't have to do it till 2025.
Yep. So you're exempt you're skipped until you're 2025. So for example, my company, my existing clients right now, the open companies will be prior to 24. They'll have 2025 to start reporting. They have 30 days to report. But if you open a company today, you have 90 days to report. But in essence, this is more of extra revenue potentially for new firms or for existing firms. But also depends on what you're trying to do, right? That's a decision, business decision as a firm owner. If you want to add that kind of revenue, which potentially can add the revenue to your, you know, especially if you have, like, let's say 500 to 1,000 clients and they all have LLCs. Because now the past 3-4 years since COVID, everybody has an LLC now. Literally everybody has an LLC. Side hustles and DoorDash, Uber,
everybody's an LLC, and everybody, almost everybody is an S corp.
Exactly. And now, so at most, what is it, like 90% of small businesses are like under 20 employees full time, something like that. So most small businesses are less than 20 employees. So most small businesses will have to file. Now comes the second part, is that added value to your client? No, it's not. It's a compliance part, just like payroll, just like tax returns, you know. But the client will have pay hefty fee if they don't report. And that hefty fee will scare the client to find somebody else to report for them. Now, the second part is that what's the price you're going to sell it for? Is it worth it for you to sell it at a certain price? Can you scale it and make money off of it? What's the problems that we'll face along the way when you are trying to, you'll face during the year with the clients? The thing is with this one that we talked about is that if you do a good job, it's, you know, expected.
It's unnoticed. It's a thankless job.
If you don't do a good job, you get penalized and you're fired for it. It's not win-win for you. Now, the only thing I would see reasonable incentivized with is charging enough money to make it worth it for you. And then you can give it to somebody else that will do all the work. You get the clients, they do all the work, you make the money off of it. That'll be the only way I see it justified. But it's a headache by itself. Yeah, because the client, if it's not responsive and he gives you everything last minute, expects you to do it last minute, and then you don't do it, and, oh, I gave it to you, you didn't do it for me, blah, blah, blah. What's the price? What's the penalty going to charge that client for those things? Is it worth it? Just some firms don't do payroll services. Some firms do payroll services, correct? Is that something you want to put at your firm to do? And it's a good moneymaker potentially if you can do it right.
Like anything else? Like any other reporting, like any other compliance, you know, you're charging for 1099s, I hope, or property tax listings or other things like that. This is just another one.
Exactly. But I think with this one, there's a consequences based on it. There's a fee potentially imposed on this if you're late. So I don't know how you're going to enforce it. That's the only thing, if it's worth charging $500 for it.
We've got some runway on this for all of our existing clients, everybody. But it's definitely going to be something to think about. Bilal, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom with our students. You've got a lot to share. So you're doing a lot of things now too. And I wanted to get into that. We may have an extended conversation, but you are doing a podcast too for accountants.
Yes.
That's not going to bring in any money for your firm, is it?
No. Hell no.
So why?
I mean, mainly.
And asking you this because I do that too. I'm doing the same thing.
So I always wanted to help accountants because when I started, I felt this should be better way of doing this. You know, better pricing and better services. And because at that time when I started, I was asking my local CPA friends, and they all were doing it the old school way and heavy tax season and low pricing and just commodity and running. And then by accident, I found this online thingy, and by accident, I found this processes, and by accident, I found this tax planning, you know, service. And
you kind of stumbled upon everything.
Yeah, because it has to be a better way. Because I felt like I cannot do this. I don't want to do this. It has to be a better way. So I was like, okay, let me go find it. So I found it. So it was just something that I had. And I think the biggest obstacle for a lot of accountants is confidence. They're scared of charging that price. Very similar to dentists. Dentists have the same fear charging a price for their services. And I had the same fear also starting out. I had the same fear, but I put myself in certain groups that were charging higher than me. I was like, okay, now I can get more confident in charging higher prices. So initially, I started so Kelly was, I tried to recruit Kelly before she opened her own firm, by the way. I don't know if you know this. I tried to recruit her to work with me, and she wasn't, we became friends on LinkedIn before she opened her firm. So I was like trying to recruit people on LinkedIn and all this stuff, and I found, I don't know how I found her. She was posting things and kind of found her. So I recruited her at that time. It was a few years ago. And then it's like, oh, I'm not moving. I'm not leaving. I'm not coming to you. I want to open my own firm. It's like, oh, congratulations, stuff like that. If you need any help, I'll help you with blah, 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 blah. And then a few years later, I don't know how it came up with starting a podcast. I think I reached out to her. She reached out to me. I was like, yeah, why not? She's doing her own thing with the accounting firm. And she's doing also on the side. She's helping also other accountants mastermind with her group she's trying to do. And I was like, yeah, let's share your experience and my experience, how I started, how she started. Because we have very, very similar firms and we same projecting, I would say, revenue. Because she's like 2 years and a half after, she started 2 years and a half after me. And she's like in the middle where she's the revenue-wise where I'm at, where I was 2.5 years ago. So at least we have some trajectory where, okay, we can help you go from 0 to 1 million based on where we...
You're both on the same escalator. She's just a few steps down.
Yes, yes, 100%. So initially, it was to share our experiences, grow our audience. And yeah, that was like, in a way, I wanted to help other CPAs to really gain the insight and know that, hey, there's a better way out there. There's a way better way out there. And there's your value, your expertise is valuable. Your expertise is very valuable. And you can charge for that money. You don't have to work 80 hours a week. I think that 80 hours a week type of is worth it if you're making a lot of money. I think it has to be a balance. You know, if you work,
is it worth it if you're making a lot of money? Because even at a certain point, people say that they worked their whole life and at the end, they've got all this money, but they're alone.
Yeah, I agree. But if they enjoy it.
Divorced. Yeah, yeah.
If they enjoy it, it's different. I think if you're working 80 hours a week and making 200 grand a year, it's not worth it, right? It doesn't matter if you enjoy it or don't enjoy it. It's not worth it. There has to be something that you got to give.
But if you enjoy it, week and you love what you're doing, then it doesn't feel like work.
Exactly. It has to be a balance where it makes sense and you can make the decision on your own. But end of the day, I would say that was the initial step where we wanted to really, me and her had that drive to help other firms with the podcast.
Dope. Well, I appreciate you guys doing that. I think more people need to go out and share their experiences and learn from doing something like this because putting yourself out there is hard. And putting on a show is hard and you may not see any immediate reward besides the fact that it's making, I mean, it, honestly, it should be fulfilling for you to educate and to teach people. And I think judging by our conversations, you're getting that and you're enjoying what you're doing. And that's the key in all of these things. So if I can give you any advice too, because I've been at this for a little while, I love doing it. That's the only reason I'm doing it. I'm not making any money doing this accounting high stuff. That's all for my firm. My firm is my cash machine. Eventually I'd like to monetize it a little bit more than some sponsorships here and there, but I think, you know, keep doing it because you like it. Keep your friendship with Kelly too and continue doing that because our profession needs it desperately. We need people to show you that there is a way and you don't have to go out and figure these things out by accident and stumble upon them because there is a better way. And other people are doing it. You've grown your business to over $1 million in less than 5 years. Mm-hmm. And you have a path to financial freedom. And you have a path to let this business run without you. Because look, I'm on that same escalator. I'm just a few steps up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's possible. I mean, think about it. Kelly is here. I'm here. You're here. So we're like, if you draw a line, it's like a, you know, we can draw a line between from Kelly to you, right?
We're in the middle. Stairway to heaven.
Exactly.
And I don't know about stairway to heaven, but yeah.
It's doable. Accountants in general like to help people. That's why
accountants.
A nurse likes to help people in a way, but more medical side. But we like to help people on the numbers side. We're like a different version of a nurse.
We definitely are, yeah.
I would say, yes, we like to help people. And in fact, I was like, this profession has a lot of benefits. A lot of benefits. And
well, you've spoken on a lot of them. You can work from anywhere.
Work from anywhere. You know,
make a lot of money doing it.
Flexible hours, anytime you want. Work, make money doing it. Also, something we haven't touched on is the revenue streams they can create off of accounting. So you have your R&D revenue stream, you have your cost revenue stream, you have your retirement revenue stream that you can create off of accounting. Because every client will need R&D, a lot of times need R&D, a lot of clients will need cost seg, a lot of clients will need retirement planning. If you can team up with those people that do those specialty work, right, that's a revenue stream, ongoing revenue stream every year you can get. You can build that revenue stream forever. Right.
There's so many endless wheels on the spoke on the cycle. Like every
100%,
100%. Yeah, we're sitting in the center of it because we see all of it. We have a clear view of all of their financials.
100%. And something I'm working on right now, and it's something that I can share hopefully when it's said and done, is selling your services. I'm coming up with like a nice way to sell services because I think it doesn't exist in the marketplace. Because we have a just very product-based type pricing where it's a bookkeeping for this much, tax plan for this much. I'm trying to make it more where I'm using the Alex Hormozi style of selling, where you can sell a higher price, but show the client what they're buying. That's something I'm excited about. Hopefully, if it's said and done, I can share with you. And
we'll do that on part two the next time 100%. We have you on, and maybe junior year at Accounting High.
So yeah, yeah.
Appreciate you coming on, Bilal. You've been a great assistant faculty here at Accounting High, so we'll have to have you come back on.
Thank you, Scotty.
Peace out, homies. Class dismissed.
Grow, 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 grow marketing. It's Thursday. We gon' advertise and chat on Thursday. At Accounting High and Branding Talk is Thursday. And we gon' help you social post so you're in first place. It's time for social studies, accounting content hub, LinkedIn marketing, or X. So come join a social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love. If you into social studies, it's time for social studies, accounting content hub, LinkedIn marketing, or X. So come join a social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love. If you into social studies. Welcome back, Accounting High. Now it's time for social studies. We'll teach you new creative ways to market old products. Move beyond basics with graph and stats. Some studs you love. Position like Laura Lynn and you'll learn it's not all luck. Oh wait, now it all change. SEO down, IG up. ICX, Meta, TikTok, hey, LinkedIn, Roman V up. If you watch how they post, you'll see it's all authentic and genuine. Grow a following and don't get held back by perfection. Be intentional online, create content. Now that's hot. Strategy is key with social media and pod. Start slow, pick a platform, stick to it, and go post. Make a plan to engage with client watering holes. Create a focus brand, be a lead online. It's a digital world with the best ROI. Now create your own ideal client persona. Let's go. Keyword Accounting High and get ready to flow. It's time for social studies, accounting content hub, LinkedIn marketing, or X. So come join our social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love. If you into social studies, it's time for social studies, accounting content hub, LinkedIn marketing, or X. So come join our social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love. If you into social studies, follow this show, stay in the know. Thought lead online through networking. Like, share, repost, subscribe, YouTube, comment, engage, create, find your way.